The state of Florida has passed at least four pieces of anti-gun legislation in the months since the Parkland shooting. But a fatal shooting last week is now raising questions about the state's newly revised Stand Your Ground law. Last Thursday, Marquise McLaughlin was fatally shot by a man carrying a concealed weapon in the parking lot of a convenience store. The shooter, Michael Draca, got into an argument with McLaughlin's girlfriend over a parking spot. McLaughlin, who is black, heard about it and confronted Draca, who is white. He pushed Draca to the ground, and then Draca shot and killed him. Citing Florida's Stand Your Ground law, local law enforcement has elected not to charge Draca. Here's Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Galtieri talking about the shooting on Friday.
You know, before Stand Your Ground, a case like this probably would have a different outcome.
About half of the states in the United States have Stand Your Ground laws on the books. And here to explain is John Donahue, a professor of law at Stanford University.
Well, as you mentioned, about half the states now have a Stand Your Ground statute. And the rest of the states do not have a Stand Your Ground statute, but have some variation of their defense provisions determined by either a statute or by just general judge-made common law.
And I think there are lots of misinterpretations or just interpretations of what Stand Your Ground means. Is there one sort of way to explain it, even though we know that in each state it's slightly different?
Yes. I mean, in general, the new Stand Your Ground movement has largely tried to bulk up the right of self-defense in a way to give individuals the right to avoid a common law doctrine that prevailed for centuries in England and the United States in many jurisdictions, that you have a duty to retreat. So if you can avoid injuring someone, you're not allowed to use deadly force in those jurisdictions that still maintain that duty to retreat. Stand Your Ground jurisdictions, if you're in a place where you are allowed to be, you don't have to retreat. And if you're feeling a threat of imminent bodily injury or fear of death, you're allowed to use deadly force to defend yourself.
Without prosecution, is that right?
That's right.
Then we know that Florida specifically changed its Stand Your Ground law last year to shift the burden of proof onto prosecutors. What effect does that shift have? Because I think when many people think of Stand Your Ground, that's where they think Florida.
Yeah, and the Florida statute is probably about as strong for those who want to assert a very vigorous right to self-defense as any jurisdiction. As you mentioned, there is a question of who has the burden of establishing that the use of deadly force was legitimate. And in Florida now, the burden rests on the prosecutor when someone is asserting that they have used self-defense. The burden is now on the prosecutor to prove that that was not a legitimate use of self-defense. And that reverses the traditional common law view that someone who asserts the use of force must raise that as a defense and has the burden of establishing that it was a legitimate use of force.
I also want to talk about, I want to go back a little bit to the history. You mentioned the Stand Your Ground sort of movement. Can you give us a sense of who is behind this, when this started taking effect, and why this is suddenly something that we're seeing in so many, in half the states in our country?
Well, I think it sort of emanates out of the NRA movement to try to expand the right to carry guns outside the home. So as states started to pass right to carry laws, more and more individuals were carrying guns outside the home, and that led to confrontations. And so the NRA perceived that sales would be hampered if individuals who were carrying guns were starting to be arrested and prosecuted for using them. And so they were then behind the efforts to essentially make it easier to use guns in those settings outside the home.
So one of the, when we think about Stand Your Ground, we saw a case in Florida last week where a black man was killed in a Florida parking lot, and supposedly there was the use of Stand Your Ground there. We've also seen Stand Your Ground also in the state of Florida, and I'm thinking specifically of the case of Marissa Alexander, who is a black woman who used the same defense, in fact, did not kill anyone, shot into the air, I believe, a warning shot, and was not able to call into her defense the Stand Your Ground provision. Are we seeing this Stand Your Ground provisions being used disproportionately or benefiting disproportionately white Americans as opposed to Americans of color?
Yeah, that's a great question. And certainly many of the recent episodes of Stand Your Ground use in Florida have involved cases of white individuals shooting a minority individual. And in general, there's a lot of reason to be apprehensive about the aggressive use of Stand Your Ground in this case, because some recent research has shown that it's easier to feel apprehension when there's an other confronting you, and racial lines can often divide that otherness. So there's real concern. And then, of course, if you are seeing prosecutors employ this in a way that maybe is appealing to their constituents, you worry if, you know, minority status is leading to worse outcomes for those individuals.
Well, and we're also seeing in this particular case in Florida, the sheriff has decided that he will not prosecute the person involved in this shooting, and actually said before Stand Your Ground, a case like this probably would have had a different outcome. Is this putting a lot more power and discretion into places that, or into people's hands that necessarily shouldn't have it?
I think America is sort of going down the wrong path right now. In most of the other advanced industrialized nations, there's a concerted effort on the part of government to reduce the likelihood that anyone will be shot. So Stand Your Ground is a very strong movement in the other direction, and I think you see some of the negative consequences of that move.
John Donahue is a professor of law at Stanford University. John, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure to chat.